Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Blooming Basics for Z, VM, and Linux System Z Part 3 teleconference. And now I'll turn the conference back over to Julie Liesenfeldt. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Catherine. Welcome back, or thank you for joining us again live, or if you're listening to the replay. Our final topic in Blooming Basics is Cloud Computing 101, What Every Z Person Must Know. Frank is going to take questions at the end of the presentation, so again, if you have any, please jot them down. We will do, before we start Q&A, a one-question survey just to get your feedback on the overall Blooming Basics for us. And Frank, please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Julie. What we're about to go through is a set of charts that were given at the System Z Expo back in 2009, the end of 2009, what is now considered the System Z University. So it really was focused not just on IBM internal, but also the larger Z community. It really is focused on kind of very basic, what is cloud computing, and then kind of relates it towards the end to System Z and why I think it's important that System Z people understand it. So assuming you're looking at the chart deck, the second chart is who I am. My name is Frank DiGilio. I work in the Worldwide Client Technology Centers, and my job primarily is to take the latest technologies and help clients understand how they can take those technologies and make them part of their infrastructures. Slide 3 kind of shows where I work. I do spend a lot of time on planes. I spend a lot of time with clients in their locations. I enjoy technology. As you could see from slide 2, I'm on Facebook. I really try and understand how those technologies are used so that when I sit down with a client, I can show practical applications. Because technologies like cloud are great in universities. They're great to play with at home, but it's not always easy to understand exactly how they're going to be used on a day-to-day basis in a real world. So let's start on slide 4 with kind of this overview of what cloud computing is. The problem with a lot of this stuff is that cloud computing means different things to different people, and it's a dangerous thing to talk about, because what happens is people have their own preconceptions about what it should be, and it's those preconceptions that are going to get in the way as you try to figure out where you want to be. If you go out to YouTube or some especially YouTube, you can find a number of videos that where people kind of describing what cloud computing is. And one of them in particular I was watching, and it was at one of these conferences, a cloud conferences, and they got some of the people who were talking at them to say, here's my view of cloud computing, and this is what cloud computing is. And they have 9 or 10 different talking heads on there, all presumably important people in the cloud community. And they all talked about cloud, and they talked about them from a different perspective. And so they said very different things. And so as Z people, this is important because we are kind of very infrastructure-oriented, and we really care a great deal about what cloud means because we know about infrastructure. And all of these different views were very user-based. So they talk about cloud as a way of having things that they don't, you know, where the user doesn't have to know anything about the infrastructure, and the user just kind of makes a request and things happen. And that's all very well and good for a user, because as far as the user is concerned, all of those infrastructure pieces just appear and they're there and you don't have to worry about it. Well, I've always thought of technology, about complexity as a balloon. So if in the balloon you squeeze one end of the balloon, it gets smaller, and when you do that, the other end gets larger. Complexity is like that. If I'm making it easier for somebody, if I've got the person at the squeezed end of the balloon saying, I don't have to worry about the infrastructure, it's just there and it happens, it must be getting harder for somebody. So if it's getting easier for the end user, it's going to get harder for those of us who are doing the infrastructure. And that's kind of a key piece of this view of cloud computing. It's going to be easier for the end users. It's going to be harder for someone else. And that someone else is definitely going to be us, right, as infrastructure people. One of the people who I've heard describe cloud computing, which I think Z people really need to understand, is cloud computing is making that infrastructure look more like a mainframe infrastructure. If you think about what we do from a mainframe perspective, our view of the world is very locked in on having the infrastructure manage things and have people who are developing code and using the system less and less connected with what's actually happening underneath the covers. So from a certain point of view, cloud is attempting to do what we in Z have done forever. So let's go to slide 5 and talk a little bit about kind of the logical blocks of cloud computing. There's a concept of software as a service. There's this concept of platform as a service and infrastructure as a service. And we're going to kind of go into a little bit more at least detail of what these are. But these are those basic things that you're going to hear about from the outside world about cloud computing. And on the face of them, they're relatively simple and straightforward. We talk about infrastructure being the operating system and below. We talk about the platform as a service, kind of this middleware view and below. And we talk about software as a service. And what's neat about these things is inherent in the way they're described is a level of concern, right? So at the infrastructure as a service perspective, your understanding is generally at, I need to know about infrastructure from an OS perspective perhaps, and I really don't care about the details of how that OS is provided to me, it's just there. And so I don't have to worry about the hardware, I don't worry about networking, I don't worry about maintenance or any of that kind of stuff. All that stuff is handled. All I have to worry about is from the operating system up. And so it gives me a certain amount of freedom. I don't have to have the hardware in my building. I don't have to deal with any of those issues. From a platform perspective, I'm going to worry about middleware. And let's say I'm worrying about something like WebSphere, right? So, because we all, as Z people or as IBMers, really say, oh, well, you know, what middleware is there outside of WebSphere? Don't get me started. But from a base perspective, we have this concept of WebSphere container, and I don't care about the operating system. I don't care about the hardware. All I care about is I'm going to build J2E applications or Java applications, and they're going to be put into WebSphere, and I never have to think about it again. And all the thoughts of maintenance and all that is somebody else's problem. At a software as a service level, I may be thinking about the application, providing the application that sits on top of something like WebSphere, and everything underneath is somebody else's problem. So as I go up this stack, less and less of the infrastructure is interesting to me, and I just count on somebody else doing that work. And that's kind of an important concept, because what I'm trying to do is take away from the user's perspective more and more of all the things that make those things work. As I go up this stack, I I actually have a lot more freedom in implementation, provided that the end user gets the software or gets the service that they expect in that environment. Of course, this really can play to us in the Z space. I remember talking to a group of Z people back in the late 90s and saying there will be a time when the people who develop code and the people who use this infrastructure will not have any connection to the hardware. They won't even care. And people looked at me and said, you know, what color is the grass on your world? Because in our world, there's always going to be this tight connection. There's always going to be people saying, yes, I want to implement this on that platform or this platform. And we're seeing that there is this disconnect today, and that the whole industry is moving toward that disconnect. And that works in our favor as Z people, because in the past, there was a lot of people who said, I only want to work on platform, you know, on x86, or I want to work on Unix, or I want to work on Z. And all of that stuff is starting to go away. And that works to us, because now we can start having conversations about how do I do this best and not how do I promote a platform. Now, that doesn't mean there still won't be platform bigots. I think we all know that platform bigotry is a religion, and people don't get away from their religions quickly. But this whole push allows us to have that at a different level. And it's not at the end user level or even the developer level. It becomes much more a discussion for a different set of people. On slide 6, we want to talk a little bit about where this has come from. Cloud computing, the people who push cloud computing like to think of it as the new world, as a completely revolutionary process, but it just isn't. And if you look at where cloud computing is today, it has deep roots in utility, it has deep roots in grid and cluster and supercomputing, and we'll talk a little bit about those. So on the top, we have this software as a service, platform as a service, and infrastructure as a service, and some examples. Again, these are somewhat old examples from a cloud computing time frame. Amazon as an infrastructure as a service, Google providing their Google App Engine as a platform as a service, and Salesforce is kind of one of the big software as a service flagship from an operational perspective. We could also look at Google Docs as software as a service, or I don't know how many of us have used any of the Lotus tools for collaboration, certainly the Lotus Live stuff and the Lotus meeting tools are great examples of software as a service. If any of you are using any of the Lotus community tooling internally, all of that's cloud-based. You don't really know where your blogs or your wikis or even your discussion stuff is. It just happens, and who cares whether it's on a Z or a P or an X or whatever. It just is there and works most of the time, right? So it's this kind of thing that we're moving toward. It has all of the roots in this, in stuff that IBM has been really kind of heavily invested for a long time. And it gives us a very rich background. On slide 7, I wanted to bring in just some basic cloud definitions that, as you're talking to clients, you can kind of be rooted in. And this is very strongly what we have been looking at as a company. We believe that cloud is shared computing resources, that to be most effective, those resources are based on a virtualized environment. They are very service-oriented, as you can tell by this concept of talking things about platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, and software as a service. And they use some very open API model. A lot of them are web service-based or Web 2.0-based. And they kind of work together in this so that it's not something that a person has to work in a very kind of low-level model. The cloud enables this concept of a virtual data center where I have some things that are local, some things that are remote, and a service provider kind of links all that together for you. So you have all of this remote service. Some of it will have external pieces. Some of it will have very local pieces, and you don't really care how it all links together. Certainly, if I'm using something like Google Docs, a lot of the components are remote, but when the time comes to print, you really want that print to happen locally. But you as the user don't really understand or need to understand what connects those remote services to the local printer. It just happens, right? And that's key to what we're trying to have accomplished in a cloud model. As I mentioned already, all of this has to be very service-oriented. The resources are all thought of as services. Those services appear as you need them. They're very scalable. They're on demand. So if only one person is using this service, I have a very different model from if I have thousands of people using this as a service. This is very important because from a model perspective, it's a very basic business shift. So in the past, in order to do things, I would have to buy hardware, I would have to buy software, I would have to build this and maintain this and own this, and I have this huge investment up front. And in this model, I'm only going to pay for the resources that I need as I need them. And that's a really important business model because now I'm changing from a capital expense investment to an operational expense investment. This is probably the one big thing that is making businesses look at cloud because they're suddenly seeing maybe I don't have to make all of this investment today. Maybe what I can do is leverage the services as I need them, and, wow, this sounds like a really good model for me because now I can invest only as I need it and grow the investment as the need for that investment grows. And that's a really important thing. On slide 8, we talk a little bit about this logical progression. There was a time when we had grid computing, and grid computing was cool because it allowed me to leverage parallel computing to solve a set of problems, which before was much more linear. And so the neat thing about grid was that I started with this concept of being able to say, I have a small group of servers to solve a problem, and I can easily add nodes to that grid as the problem grew. So if you think about cloud computing as a model that grows and shrinks with demand, grid was the first concept of taking all of these things and having enough of a high-level interface that will allow us to add nodes into the model and take them away depending on the need of that of the problem space that I'm trying to solve. In early 2000s, we had this concept of utility computing, which kind of built off of this grow and shrink model, and we would offer each of these things resources as a metered service. So today you have 5 computers, tomorrow you have 10, the day after you have 50 or 100, and I can grow those as much as you need, and it would be a utility, just like you pull power from the wall. You don't think about, well, gee, how many generators are involved. All I think about is I need 100 watts or 200 watts or 300 watts or how many megawatts or how many, and it just grew. And you just pulled and paid for how much you used. I have the meter at my house, and a meter reader comes along and says, oh, look, you've used X number of kilowatts since the last time I checked. I know exactly how to bill you. And that's the utility model. From that, we get this concept of software as a service, where I would have subscriptions to applications, and you would pay for those subscriptions. It was much more of this model where stuff isn't necessarily connected to me physically. It's much more network-based. As 2000 went along, there was a relatively large company that came up with this concept of on-demand computing, and that company was talking about, wouldn't it be cool to be able to have resources grow and shrink with your demand, so that if you need X number of web servers, they appear for you, and if you don't need them, it goes away. And you pay only for what you use, right? And then today we're talking about this concept of cloud computing, where stuff comes and it goes and it's over there and it's over here and who knows exactly and who cares. It's a logical progression, right? We've been talking about cloud computing for a very long time. We haven't used the term cloud, but all of those component pieces, IBM has had a key role in as it matures. And that's kind of frustrating for us as IBMers to be able to say, well, wait a minute. You talk about this cloud computing thing like it's a new thing. And it's something that we've been talking about for a long time. How did we go from we're there and kind of push that concept to suddenly not being in the forefront? And we really, from an infrastructure perspective, really have been. So on slide 9, we kind of talk a little bit about all of those different pieces, supercomputing, high cost, high performance machines, and doing a lot of this parallel tasks. And it really kind of takes computing and kind of pushes it out in a very parallel way. Cluster computing was a way of doing supercomputing on a much cheaper scale by saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool instead of having a big machine that does a lot of this parallel stuff, let's start kind of connecting small, less expensive machines together and get them to act like a single computer. Now, as deep people, you should start saying, cluster computing, it's a lot of parallel stuff. I want to have multiple images look like a single thing. Isn't that what we do? Yes. And if you think about these models, this is the distributed world thinking about the kinds of problems that we've solved on the mainframe a long time ago, but we've had some advantages that they haven't. One, we've owned all the hardware. Two, we've owned the software. And so we've been able to kind of manage that growth. In the distributed world, it hasn't been that well controlled. So all of these things out in the distributed world, they're starting to say, how can we do the kinds of things that are done in the mainframe without the kind of homogeneity that we've been able to enjoy in that environment? So the homogeneity has hurt us because people wanted to have their own control, but now they're starting to see, gee, wouldn't it be really cool to have some of the same kind of power? And so as you look at things like cluster and grid computing and utility computing, it really is a way to get the distributed world to kind of look at life the way we do. So we've talked about this concept of as a service. On slide 10, we really kind of lay it out as application, software as a service, platform, the middleware as a service, and then infrastructure, the lower-level OS and hardware as a service for users. Slide 11 starts to talk about infrastructure as a service. This is the oldest piece of cloud computing. It is the kind of the most mature. It really is one that, you know, we think about things like Amazon's Enterprise Computing 2 as a way of doing this. We have been in this space for quite some time in a much more club-based model, not in the internet-based model. Businesses have been able to come into IBM for a long time, either in an SO model or in a compute-on-demand model, as getting a set of leased servers, either complete hardware or as virtual machines. We haven't really done multi-tenant accounts on a piece of hardware for clients a lot because of their requirements, but really in an infrastructure as a service model, that's where it's going, right, is to have multi-tenant environments in virtual machines. Really the concept is I think I need one virtual machine today that may grow to, you know, X number tomorrow, and you, the person or group who is in providing that infrastructure, is responsible for the network and the load balancing and the ability to ensure that as I grow, all the infrastructure to make use of all of those images just automatically happens. If you think about the technology that has come along in this over time, much more powerful hypervisors, the ability to do that on less and less expensive machines, more commodity servers, it really is something that allows people to start investing in a very inexpensive way in this model. And that's what's made Amazon a very interesting model from a infrastructure as a service perspective, because now I can take, I want to do a quick development thing. I want to build this little Java thing. I can now go and get infrastructure for a few pennies per hour, and I'm ready to go. And if it's something that works, I can build it out so a whole bunch of people can try it, but I don't pay for that up front. I pay just for what's being used. And so that's a very interesting thing for people to start, especially if you're a mom-and-pop shop or you're trying to build something on a shoestring. Slide 12 talks about some of the technology enablers for doing infrastructure as a service, concept of virtual appliances. Some of the industry is looking at this open virtualization format so that as I create an infrastructure as a service with kind of this very light OS model, that I can then make it run in multiple places, and it doesn't really matter whether I'm running on VMware or Xen or KVM, as long as you have this concept of an OVF format for your infrastructure, it will run there. Certainly the concept of provisioning tools for operating systems and applications and middleware are important pieces for this, so that I can now, without having a person manage, I can have some automation to do that. And so provisioning is the key underpinning for making automation work. So if you look again at something like Amazon can afford to provide infrastructure for pennies because they have provisioning tools, they have automation tools, and the number of people involved in making this infrastructure available to somebody becomes much, much cheaper. I have less people involved. Less people means less money. I can let the infrastructure manage itself. And because it's all virtual, I'm not making machines happen, I can now provide this at a much easier, much cheaper way. So from a cloud perspective, Lex Luthor's father was right. People are no damn good. If I can do it all automatically, I can do it much, much cheaper. And so what happens is I now have an environment where I have 2,000 images. I have one person managing 2,000 images. Why? Because it's very standard. It's very straightforward. It's very automated. And the people have very little that they have to do to keep it running. And that is what makes it work well. Slide 13 starts to talk about this concept of platform as a service. I now have that concept of an infrastructure as a service, and then I lay on top of it a very tightly coupled application framework. There is a higher level of abstraction, so I have to have a much greater trust in the underlying infrastructure. But there are tools like Google App Engine. Now on Amazon, we supply a developer version of WebSphere. You can now be out and playing with this stuff, and you don't have to own any of that infrastructure to make it work. There aren't as many people involved in this. There's a little bit more reticence about getting involved and having that trust, and really is kind of very early, really at the early stages of this. And people are realizing, gee, if I build something that runs in the Google App Engine or I build something that runs in WebSphere, how hard is it going to be for me to go and implement that somewhere else? Now I have a dependency on some middleware provider. If they start making rules, I'm stuck with it, and there's nothing I can do about it. And the whole concept of the Internet is kind of this open, and I trust this guy, but I want to change and go to something else. So platform as a service kind of works counter to that, because now I'm kind of tying my hitch to a single horse, and I don't have quite the same ability to jump out and do something else. Slide 14 talks about software as a service. Now I'm at that point where the application is the application. It can be built on infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, and there's all of that infrastructure is somebody else's problem. Salesforce.com, perfect example. It's running on the Google App Engine, and they don't really touch any of that infrastructure. And Salesforce.com has been very, very successful. Another cloud tool that you might have some experience with is Facebook. Facebook is software as a service. It's out there. You don't know anything about how it's implemented. You know that there are some really cool games out there, and I play those games, or I communicate with friends. I share data, pictures, videos, links, and it all happens without me doing anything or really touching anything or knowing anything. The neat thing about Facebook is that here's a cloud model that is not only working, but is actually making money. So there are ways to monetize based on this. It's just a little bit different from the traditional thing that we've been looking at. So here I am, a person who doesn't want to have a lot of money to spend. I can build this software as a service. I can sell it, and I can. I don't need to make a lot of money because the margins are not that big. Can be larger because I don't have a lot of overhead to make that happen. Now, we've been talking primarily about these things as all the really cool, neat, snifty things. There are some things as we start going down that say, well, you know, that's all very well and good, but there are some things that are barriers to making this work, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in detail later, but things like IoT data security and SLA start to become a very important issue. Again, I also end up with this concept of lock-in. I'm really kind of stuck. And if I want to migrate or interoperate with other things in the future, what am I locking myself into? So it's great that I can use the Google Docs to do the kinds of things I would normally do in Microsoft Office products. But now, as I'm using Google, have I now tied myself to somebody else? And are they saving any of that data somewhere that I don't know about? You know, what's mine and what's theirs? And there have been a number of articles that kind of talk about, gee, what happens when you trust the cloud? Where does the data go? What happens to availability? What happens if I really need those docs and I can't get to the cloud? What are my options? So all of these things have a positive and negative side. On slide 15, we talk about the two kind of basic cloud deployment models, this concept of having an internal or private cloud and a public cloud. And when we think of cloud today, we're probably thinking primarily of that public cloud because that's what's had the most amount of press. But just because that public cloud has talked about how cloud should work in this space, we have to be thinking about a cloud in a much wider perspective because it's the internal private cloud which is probably a lot more interesting to Z people because that is where we have quite a bit to offer to companies. On slide 16, this kind of just talks about trends in the industry that are driving cloud. And for me, one of the key concepts is the fact that wide broadband pipes have become the norm. It wasn't too long ago when every house, the concept of connecting to the internet was tied to a modem and dialing up, right? So everything was done over that traditional switch network. Today, you'd be hard-pressed to find people who do their connectivity that way. Certainly for a large number of us, the proliferation of things like cable companies in this, companies like Fios and even Dish being able to connect you in a high bandwidth way has made a very big difference in how we consume IT. It becomes a lot easier to take advantage of things like Facebook and YouTube because that infrastructure now allows us to move quite a bit more data back to our home environments. And things that we wouldn't even dream of doing in a dial-up world are now second nature to us, right? Not only that, I would say that more and more our phones are becoming computers that we rely on for technology beyond just talking. I cannot get my teenage children to call me to save my life, but their ability to use this as a mail device, certainly texting has become the norm in that environment. So the people are starting to use the technology differently. They're starting to connect things locally. They're starting to be less and less interested in where each component is. All of these are trends that are driving the need for cloud. Less interest in where things are running, less interest in the technology, more interest in how that can be used. And the intense amount of data that passes around to make this happen, right? Web 2.0, the ability to take data from this and data from that and merge it together right on the local device is a key piece of why this is being thrust forward in such a dynamic way. Slide 17 talks about the business drivers for cloud. We've talked about the fact that this is a high deployment. I can do things lightly and quickly. I can now, in that model, build prototypes very quickly, try them, test them out, and I don't have to wait around. You need a machine that's going to take 6 weeks and, you know, fill out this PO and we'll talk about it. And so you have to invest in that. So I have large lead time. All that disappears in the cloud. I don't need to build IT capital to make it happen. So all of these, from a business perspective, make cloud very, very interesting. Slide 18, what are the barriers to make that happen? Well, I've already mentioned, where's my data? How is that going to affect my business? Gee, I really don't want this available to the public. Many countries have regulations that say you can't just have data anywhere. If this data is about my citizens, it has to stay in my country. You can't just have it anywhere. So those things are barriers to having cloud work. Cloud, you now have to worry about what somebody else's availability, what are their SLAs, how are they going to have that data available to you, how am I going to manage it, how am I going to ensure that the cost doesn't grow at a time when I have no control over it. Excuse me. How do I customize stuff? Cloud models tend to be you get what you get, and that's it. And that's primarily because of this concept of automation. So you get what you get because that's the easiest thing to automate. It's new. Companies have a hard time going toward the new stuff. And, of course, in a corporation, this concept of, gee, if I make this all a service, what do they need me for? And the whole idea of cloud is to have less and less people. This is my job. I'm going to sabotage getting that way. These are all kind of the things that tend to slow cloud in companies. Slide 19 just kind of says what's different about cloud. The delivery model is things based on service. The internet, the interface model is very internet focused, using standards like HTML and HTTP, so that it's much more web-based. I pay for what I use as a paying for fixed assets. I share my environment with multiple people, so I don't pay for the whole thing. I pay for a piece that I want. Slide 20 talks about the architectural affinities for mapping these workloads. This, if you look at this chart, you get a concept of what's easier to start with. What you really want to be is in that upper right-hand quadrant where I'm going to get more gain and less pain for delivering. And so what you see here is that a lot of the collaboration tools are relatively easy to put together. They're easy. You're going to get a lot of gain out of that. As you start to get to more specific things where you have to maintain more and more control, it's going to be a lot harder to move those things into a cloud, and it's going to not provide you as much gain. So that's why things like Lotus Live are out there. The collaboration tools like Skype, tools like that are cloud-based and give you a lot of ability without a lot of cost because the delivery pain is very, very low. You'll notice that application test and that kind of development model tend to be in that space, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that because that's extremely important from a mainframe perspective. Slide 21, we want to talk about the case for infrastructure as a service in an enterprise, and this is important because this is where most enterprises are looking at cloud. And as we go through this, you'll notice that, gee, a company can get quite a bit of value for a smaller investment, and they can avoid a lot of the barriers for adoption because they're doing that generally within the company as a private cloud. Slide 22 kind of talks about this a little bit. This is the state of the way we generally do stuff. We have hardware, we have an OS running on that, and we build applications that run on that. And so everything is tightly connected. The hardware, the OS is tightly connected to the hardware, the application makes use of that OS, and everything lives in its own little world. On slide 23, we kind of talk about the fact that there's a set of concerns here that have always kind of clashed, right? On the left-hand side, what you have is us as infrastructure people are responsible for the hardware, the OS, and the middleware. But there's a piece of that middleware that development has been responsible for, as well as the application. And so the fact that we have kind of this shared responsibility always causes some tension that we end up fighting. On the right-hand side, you see more cloud model where the production is responsible for the hardware, the hypervisor, and the OS, and the middleware and application belong to a different group of people. So we separate the concern to a point where now I end up with kind of a different model, and people can be much more comfortable with what they own. Once you do that, slide 24 allows you to say, maybe in that model I don't need quite as much OS because it's more controlled, and now I start to allow these things to be start to share infrastructure. I'm sharing the hardware. They're on a hypervisor. So the app and the OS have just enough to keep going to doing what they need to do. It becomes a lower cost model. It becomes cheaper to do. And now I'm actually housing that stuff in a much smaller space. And I start to get savings that way. Slide 25 says, okay, once I've done that, what I end up with is this concept of having just enough OS and an application, and it lives in this abstract space that we call a cloud. And so now I start to remove that whole hardware concept away. Slide 26 says, okay, so now once we have this as a standard, it's just out there, and it's a cloud. And I can mix and match and make things work the way I want them to work. So slide 27 starts to say, okay, so I must have good practices for OSs and for the middleware. And I want to reduce the number of variations. When I say the number of OSs, I really mean the number of variations. So I may have a Windows, I may have a Linux, I may have a ZOS, and I don't have 50 different variations of each. And it allows me to standardize and make stuff work better. I base what I build on compatibility with a hypervisor. I allow a certain amount of customization, but not that much. I reduce the number of configurations so that it's easier to patch, and it provides me with the ability to do things without needing a lot of people. Same kind of concept from a middleware perspective. What I'm doing is I'm locking things down so that I can control things much better. And I'm going to make sure that I do it for things that make sense. I certainly am not going to do this for my databases because it's not going to work as well. Slide 28 talks about this concept of having to do chargeback because as I go to this model, it's not like you're paying for a full machine. You're going to pay for what you're using. Well, in order to pay for what you're using, you have to know exactly what you're using. And so as I become more and more multi-tenant, I have to be able to justify that you're being charged for only what you're using. And that's going to be important because I don't want to make. I don't want to charge you for everything that you're using all the time. I want you to be charged for exactly this amount, and I want to spread some of the cost across everybody so that I ensure that I'm getting the best possible return for each user, to have them be there forever, because I will end up making more money by renting them out rather than selling it up front. Slide 29 talks a little bit about service management. This is important because people think that if they're going to cloud, they don't have to worry about service management anymore. Actually, the reverse is the case. As I provide more cloud, I have to think more carefully about how I do IT service management. So concepts like, how am I going to use agents? How am I going to do change control? How am I going to manage the software licenses? How will providing multiple variations affect me? All of these kinds of things become extremely important. Slide 30 just kind of shows how all this stuff gets built up. I have to have masters of the OS. I have to have very specific definitions of what the application server is, very specific understanding of what the database is, and how all that stuff can be fit together is going to be extremely important in defining exactly what my cloud can and will do. So slide 31 starts to talk about optimal environments to migrate to cloud today. This concept of development, test, and QA become very valuable, especially for Z people, because I can build in a Linux on Z environment a develop, test, and QA model very quickly and easily. Also, what we're seeing is Hadoop and MapReduce, this concept of using the grid-like model in a cloud to be able to manage large amounts of data has been very valuable for some customers. Software as a service has been very useful. We've talked a little bit about what some of those are. Well-built SOA applications lend themselves for cloud computing. And then things like wikis and blogs and things like Skype become very useful as well. So slide 32 talks about the development and test cloud. This is very useful for us because this is where clients are really been going. They can have all of this managed in a Z environment very quickly and easily. We've had a number of different customers who have tried this. They do it internally. They manage it within their environment. From a Z perspective, they love it because they're using spare MIPS in their environment. They can use IFL engines so that they, you know, kind of get all this value. They can share at a very high degree. It's very simple in a follow the sun kind of model because it allows me to use those resources effectively 24/7. So it's from a Z perspective, it's really a strength for us. Development test is a way that a lot of customers are looking to use cloud, and especially Z customers. And I have a number of examples where Z has done this very well. So those are kind of the key things I want to talk about. I know I'm running a little low on time, but I wanted you to get kind of the basis for the cloud components, the cloud pieces, and then where it fits and where we should, as Z people, be really looking to attack. And that's really what I wanted to talk about. Are there questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, before we begin the final Q&A session, we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds with your choice. please rate the overall effectiveness and value of the call. Please press star 1 if it was very good. Please press star 2 if it was good. Press star 3 if it was fair. And star 4 if it was poor. And that does conclude our survey. Thank you for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. And we'll pause for just a moment. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 if you have a question or a comment. And we have no additional questions at this time.
Frank, thank you very much for doing this presentation. I have to look at Facebook differently now. But thank you again, and to everyone who joined us during the beginning Blooming Basics, thank you for listening and participating. And Catherine, I will turn it back to you, and we'll close out the call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude today's presentation. Thank you for your participation.